Got a bad bitch on me.
What?
Got a bad bitch on me.
She
D T F.
She tell me she
D T F.
I heard she
D T F.
What?
And you ain't hanging with the team if you ain't down to fuck.
Okay. Well,
welcome to DTF, the Daryl Timmery Fun Hour, the greatest sex education comedy, sometimes game show podcast in the known universe. Hi, I'm your resident sexuality educator, Dr. Timmery.
And I'm Daryl Charles, the other person.
Yeah, you know the formula for podcasts. There's,
yep.
There's the it's nerd, like, and the then there's the one you like.
Yep. The silly one who gets checked, a.k.a. the proxy for the audience. Yeah, I'm Neo. Yeah. She is Morpheus.
Okay. All right. That is, I'll go with that. I like it.
Yeah.
That's fun. Okay. Yeah. Trinity's clothes are more my aesthetic, but...
Sure. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Timmery is definitely Trinity aesthetic, especially beginning of Matrix Revelations. Oh, my God.
Revolutions?
Reloaded. Reloaded.
Oh, okay.
You are reloaded. You're a Trinity reloaded energy. Big Trinity reloaded energy, except for, well, yeah, because she's like a super badass, except for the whole refrigeration thing that happens with her toward the end, right?
Okay, I don't even remember these movies that well. All I remember is Monica Bellucci. I remember the rave scenes. I remember the twins and some sort of freeway fight.
Remember the chocolate cake that is very elaborately featured?
No,
the Merovingian, and he gives that innocent lady a chocolate cake that makes her horny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I need to find out more about this cake.
You're right. Oh, so you mean like regular chocolate cake?
Yeah. Because I'm going to say, like, that's kind of what happens to me.
That's what happens. That's every chocolate lover is like, nope, I want this, and then I want to be alone. Just because of the... badass motorcycle whoop somebody with a helmet vibes is why I say you would be Matrix Reloaded Trinity energy.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah.
I'm on board. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And then I'm just a proxy for the audience. I'm to sit there and go whoa until the very end, and when I go we need guns, lots of guns, and then everybody goes yeah.
And your acting career surpasses everyone else's in longevity, and then you later become famous just even for being yourself.
It's one of those things where it's like, I can't wait for the verses with Tom Cruise and Keanu Reeves, because that's a good one, and I think Keanu ekes it out.
I'm a huge fan of Keanu. Especially now, because like one of the reasons I love Keanu is like he keeps his personal life relatively private, but when he does like talk about who he's dating, it's someone who's like cool and age appropriate, and
yeah,
not
it's like
just
someone his age. It's weird.
Yeah. He's not pulling like this whole like, look guys,
Leonardo
I'm still cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, he's
DiCaprio
date
disqualifies
who's cool.
himself.
Oh, that guy.
Very quickly when you start bringing in paramours.
Yeah, to my knowledge, has never dated a woman over 25.
There's that graph.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, he keeps getting older, but the chicks stay the same age, baby.
Yeah.
It's amazing to see. And then what was great for me about watching that graph was I didn't know the name of any of these women.
No, not even Bar Raffaelli.
Who?
Bar Raffaelli.
She's an
Israeli model.
Girl with the dragon tattoo? No.
Oh, no?
See?
Wow. Okay. All right. Well.
Sorry.
So Keanu wins everything. There we go.
That's in my opinion. Yeah, your boy's doing it, especially given... Oh, man. I mean, you know, Edge of Tomorrow was a really good movie, and apparently they're doing a sequel.
Ooh.
But just thinking of, like, the Tom Cruise movies versus the Keanu Reeves movies, I mean, he's definitely got more franchises under his belt.
I mean, I love a Mission Impossible movie. Like,
sure. Sure.
Point me towards a theater in the middle of the day with a flask of whiskey and some Mission Impossible, and I am a happy camper, you know?
Oh, every time a Mission Impossible movie shows up on my feed in some sort of way, I have to actively not just press play and stop doing what I'm doing.
Okay.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible is up there as far as that, like, you know, it's had damn near as many movies as the fucking Fast and the Furious franchise. But it's so much better.
Oh,
You know, whatever. And Superman's in it.
Oh my God, yes.
Whooping ass, you know? But yeah. Yeah, a comment on our Facebook page. If you still use that. Or tweet at the both of us.
Yeah.
Keanu
versus Cruz.
Yeah, Keanu versus Cruz. Reeves Cruz. It's an interesting dialogue that I would love to have on the internet.
I mean, one of those is definitely a better person. Like,
well, I mean, you know, that, so. It's about faith, and I don't want it to be about, like, yeah, I don't want it to be about that. About the movie.
You know what though? I have to give credit where credit's due to Tom Cruise for one thing. I really actually do. So the Golden Globes are not going to be on NBC this year because. Mm-hmm. They continue to be like super white in all of their leadership and not doing anything to fix that and a bunch of other problematic stuff. And
it's more than that. It's like they're easily corruptible. I think that that's the big strike against them. Racism being a white institution that has systematically kept people out is par for the course. I don't think people are upset, but that's what they all do. But when it's like, y'all will let trash movies get awards for giving y'all food.
Ah, okay.
That is where, and it's like easily provable.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know about that piece. But in any event, Tom Cruise returned his Golden Globes. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, again, I want this conversation to be about the movies, but.
Okay.
As batshit as I have learned Scientology to be, I will still give Tom Cruise the credit for being faithful to it. Like, this is a religion / way of placing your life in the grander scheme of things that brings him peace. Yo, congrats. I understand that they do horrible shit. I understand that they might do horrible shit. I understand the accusations. I watched the documentary. Sure. However, it's a religion.
I have to be okay with religion.
I personally don't subscribe to anything, but I have to be okay. Like, if it gives you peace and it allows you to enter the day with a passion for us all to be together in some way, shape, or form, then, hey man, whatever works, dude.
Wow. Did not see this conversation coming.
Well, that's why I wanted to keep it movies. But it's yo, you know, hey man, if you are a devout Jewish person or a Christian, hey, if your faith is going to allow you to be a better citizen than having it not be there, more power to you. And to me, Scientology falls under that bubble.
Wow.
How much he's like swept up in the thing, and does he know about Miscavige's misdeeds? I don't know, but I really like the Mission Impossible movies. Minority Report was a sleeper. Edge of Tomorrow is a banger. Like, if Edge of Tomorrow's on, I'm stopping what I'm doing. It's like, I haven't seen it enough, but it really is giving me Die Hard with a Vengeance vibes of, I like watching that movie, you know?
All right. Well, I wildly disagree, but want to move on to talking about sex. So we're going to do that.
Can we talk about fucking, please?
Yeah, so on this sexuality podcast, we're going to get to our first regular segment, which is the fucking news. So So this episode is special. We decided to pick a topic. So we're gonna talk about
D theme F.
Yeah. So we're gonna talk about AI today. And the first story is a fun one. So we are hopefully familiar with Face App, just the concept of this app where you can put on these filters that you can set the gender and the age and that sort of vibe and change your face. And a very popular, I think, Twitter and Instagram account of this beautiful female biker was revealed to actually be a 50-year-old dude.
Soya no Sohi, son. Soya no Sohi. Tens of thousands of Twitter followers.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, this dude, Nakajima, he, like, is actually a biker. Like, all of the facets of what he posted were accurate. He loves taking apart motorcycles, putting them together, riding around, taking pictures of cool scenery. Yep. And when he just posted the scenery and the bike, nobody gave a shit, and he had like 6 followers for a long time. And then he decided to use Face App because, like, he's got 3 kids and they used it, and he was like, this is fun. And so he made himself a cute girl, and then all of a sudden everyone, like, gave a shit, and so he was super popular. And
they
now
gave
it's
a shit
question
and
of-
a couple thick ropes, if you know what I'm talking about.
I mean, I'm not actually sure that I followed that one. I mean, I know the thick ropes, but, like, what?
Well, I'm assuming that the reason why the follower count went up in the midst of changing only what your face looks like, definitely, in my opinion,
okay. Well, I mean, he also posted pictures of parts of his body, including his butt. And, like, that's funny that people, like, at no point were like, that looks like a 50-year-old
dude's
butt. But,
hey, look, get your squats in. You just got to do some low lunges. Hey.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the beauty standards are in Japan in terms of butts, but I guess you don't have to have, like, quite the thickness you do here.
Oh, man, I don't want to get stereotypical, but please continue.
Oh, I don't know. I just, he's an athlete. He stays in shape, so.
Sure.
People were into it.
A fit thing. But, to have, a good hip-ass ratio and the cuppage, you know, you want that underbutt. That culturally, not a Japanese thing. Historically speaking. For my, what's it called? I can never remember this word. It's the one for through experiential, like what you learn through just experience.
Oh, like anecdotal?
Anecdotal? Yeah, maybe. No. It's like the opposite of scientific, because it's not like I kept it. Anyway. Empirical. Empirical?
Yeah. I mean, empirical is a word. Yeah.
I think. Yeah. Either way.
All right, yeah. So this guy was, still got the butt. And the Washington Post interviewed him about what was going on there. And he's like, it's not a situation where he is, like, trans or was, like, really trying to catfish anybody. It's none of those narratives. Like, and he said that nobody, like, was sending him presents and he wasn't asking for money. It wasn't like that. It wasn't like a scam.
Right.
But he did get a taste of what it's like to be a woman on the internet. In his DMs. So
yeah,
so
with
we
great
got that
power
experience.
Comes great unsolicited dick pics.
Because I want to see the DMs. I wouldn't, I wouldn't imagine they were all horrible, because like he kept it pretty safe for work, and I think that that's a piece, is if you have anything that's not safe for work, everybody's just like, license to harass.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But I mean, I get some pretty dumb shit in my DMs, like, on a daily basis, and I'm just like, how have you survived this long? Like, how have you not accidentally killed yourself with, like, a fork?
Like, for being that dumb? Yeah, it's accuracy by volume. I think for some of those people, it's not it's a selfish endeavor. It's about sending the message, not about the reception that you get. That's my assumption based on empirical evidence.
Well, my tactic when people are just like in there and hi, you know, and like that kind of shit is to either send them a link to register for an upcoming workshop or a class or just my Venmo. Well, and then if they keep talking to me, I'll be like, so I gave you my Venmo, and if you send me a Venmo, I'll unblock you. Bye.
Boom. That's that. Hey, look. Hey, brass tacks. That's I like that.
Yeah, like I got stuff to do.
Yeah, you got other shit to handle. I get it. No, that works. But yeah, this person was like, here's the quote that was like, it stopped this from being just something to laugh at, and they'd be like, hey yo, this guy knows what he's doing. He was like, when you're young, you tend to be scolded or criticized by older people who say you should do this or you should do that. But at this age, there's no one around to really scold me. He added, his low-pitched voice giving way to a slight laugh. I'm having the best time of my life. And that's the thing. It's like, I'm not lying to nobody. I am me. I'm just changing up my face. If people like the face and that's why they want to follow me, hey.
Yeah. I mean, there's a really good argument to be made for young people who have always been on the internet don't expect people to be authentic and real, and they have always known that like filters exist, and so there's not an expectation for authenticity in terms of like what you look like, but the expectation is that you be who you actually are.
It's the vibes,
to
and, like, quote the young.
Yeah, so I get that. I think there's definitely something to be said for that, which is much better than, you know, the way that I guess like people who are not digital natives still can't tell the difference between a news article and like a meme.
Well, again, it's there's a difference between, and maybe there isn't a difference, but I think that there's a difference between using technology to lie about yourself for your own joy and then using technology to lie about things to other people, to give people a false sense of security about something that has nothing to do with you. Like, there's a difference, right? Because, like, you know, what is the harm if you aren't actively trying to exploit people for what they think about you? What is the harm in changing what you look like? Because, you know, at the end of the day, looks don't matter, right? It's supposed to be the thoughts and opinions and the actions and shit like that that matters. Like, that other shit is kind of superficial and we don't get to choose it. But now, thanks to technology, you can choose it a little bit.
Yeah, the only downside there, though, is we're seeing what happens to people's sense of body image when, especially over the last year, where the majority of interactions have been online, where our perceptions of what other people look like are heavily curated.
Yeah.
And then our expectations for our bodies become augmented by that normality. And then there's also...
Shout out to Will Smith. He decided to get on the right side of things.
Oh, and just be out with his dad bod?
Hey, man. Look. Nobody wants to see me. See, but that's the thing. I'm like, nobody wants to see me in just some boxer briefs strutting. But you know what? The answer is no.
People do. I know at least
one person. And I have exposed myself in boxer briefs to one room of people. Once.
And it went well?
There were applause. So, hey, okay. Look.
Yeah. I think our so there is this huge disconnect, right? So like we have these really limited ideas of which bodies are considered attractive, to which we hold ourselves to that standard. Yeah. But in reality, the number of bodies that like each person finds attractive is usually much bigger than that, is a much wider spectrum.
Without a doubt, yes. Hopefully.
And I have such a horrible time for my Not Safe for Work gallery finding a diversity of images of like male identified people. Those images are they're harder to find, and they're usually pigeonholed into specifically like gay male culture term. Sure. So you're like, you're a bear, you're an otter, you're like a wolf, whatever. So there's definitely like a market for like imagery, eroticized imagery of dudes that is outside of that. But yeah. I don't know if those pictures are just not taken as much. I don't know. Like it's so much harder to find those. And people will message me every, I don't know, I'd say I'd get a message like once every like 6 months. It's like, you got a great variety of women bodies. What about dudes? I'm like, you're right. Do you have a source? I would love to have more.
Yeah, like, all my...
They fucked up Tumblr, man.
All my images that help that are behind the paywall. What's up? We out here. Captive market. I'm kidding. Yeah. There's no paywall.
But his Venmo is.
Hey, we out here, huh? I don't know what my Venmo is.
You don't know what you're, you should know that.
I can't rattle it off. It's a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure if you look up Daryl Charles, you'll see a picture of me.
Yeah. But to go back to this body image piece, like I saw an article the other day that was about fucking Kylie Jenner or something. She works out twice a day, and I'm like, she might, but like it also helps that she has surgery and like a coterie of makeup artists, and
yeah,
like you can work real hard for those things also. Makeup is a job also. But that's, she's not what she is because she works hard in the gym. That's not what happened there.
I mean, that's part of it, sure. But she also works hard to pay a person to make sure that that thing happens.
And yeah. You know, just like wealth has a lot of benefits that we ascribe as beauty.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So.
You want to get a really good, glamorous reality TV show body? They don't take American Express. You know what I mean? Like, it's... Yeah, you gotta pay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm still wrapping my head around this dude, and it seems like this is pretty much harmless and fun, and I'm excited for him to, you know, now... I think that a really important piece to mention is that after he revealed his true identity, he was... prepared for his fan base to just fall off, and instead they're like, actually, that's great.
Hey, it's fine. You mean that I can't offend you when I touch myself? Oh. Guess what? I know my evening plans are settled.
I mean, it's mostly pictures of face too, which is like, you know, I find it impressive to be able to masturbate just to a face picture. Honestly, I consider that a skill set.
Yeah, I'm not that guy, which is why I'm just like, yeah, live and let live. If people really like it,
like, by all means, I applaud it. So yeah.
Oh, yo, shout out to Professor Daniel Young, who is interviewed in this article. She is a member of Comedy Sports Philadelphia.
Yeah. What did she have to say? I remember seeing that in the article, and I was like, that can't be the same one. And then, yeah, sure enough.
It definitely is. She said, here's the quote from the article, but she also thinks about her kids who assume, quote, that everything online is fabricated, quote, and wonders whether the rules of online identity require a bit more nuance, and whether that generational shift is already underway. Bots pretending to be people, automated representations of humanity that they perceive as exploitative, she said. But if someone engaging in identity experimentation, they're like, yeah, that's what we're all doing.
Yeah. Fair. Good point. Yeah,
totally. So what happens when you're a smart person and you have kids?
Yeah. And like... kids are engaging in sort of like postmodern discourse just by default now.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were. I also felt like when I was an actual child and into my college years, I was having a lot of conversations about what modern society means and what those roles that we are prescribed are. I think I definitely was having a lot more of those conversations from an intellectual standpoint. in the finishing school that is post-secondary education.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was a I was an overtly political kid. I liked thinking I was smart. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I also listened to Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, right. Well, I didn't get into Rage until well into my college years, but like, just that trying to deconstruct it. Like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do as a man. Mm-hmm. Especially for me personally, it was like, and here's what I'm not supposed to do because I'm a man. But I have, you know, girl cousins and a little sister and women who I've seen be told that they can't come with me to do a thing when, you know, I would trust them with my life. Why the fuck is that? Right? So like those kinds of conversations about roles and responsibilities. Because, yeah, so, I mean, if that's just talking gender-wise. I was also talking about why it was that every 10 months I was surprising a new young white person with my intellect and ability to converse.
That feels like a phenomenal segue to our next story. So, our next piece of fucking news in our theme episode. So this is an article that was put out by Wired related to some recent research and prior research. Basically, the headline is like, when AI sees a man, it thinks official, a woman, smile. So basically, the idea is like that computers are judging people by appearance, and the short answer is, who is it that programs computers? Like, that might be part of the issue.
Yeah.
But this whole piece, and I highly recommend it as just a good primer on the issues of AI ethics. It doesn't go into race as much as I would like. Other pieces do, but AI is programmed by humans and therefore has a lot of the biases that humans have,
It's not just, and I think that's a simplified way of putting it. Let me go crazy nerdy off the top. The AI models, right? The way that they are teaching computers to think for themselves. The way that they have to test these models is by letting the computers think for themselves. So what they do is they feed it a bunch of information that you would say you have now enough information to be an expert on it, or to be like, given all of this, what would be your conclusion when I give you one more thing? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And the problem here, and not the problem, but like the thing that's being highlighted is, you can be as smart as you want to make an AI that can think for itself, but all computers just know how to follow instructions. So it's like, I'm not going to give you instructions, but I'm going to say, here's a bunch of stuff. And then I'm going to say, given all that stuff, what do you think the instruction is for the next thing? That making that decision is artificial intelligence, right? Because I've given you stuff, and now you have your own intelligence. Now I want you to go and do a thing. The problem is the sets of data that we are giving these algorithms, because the information that we've given the algorithms tends to be very reflective of our culture. And our culture is not perfect, right? We have biases. Yeah, there were probably some crucial moments when we could have left bias out of our culture, but we didn't. And so in our culture are some biases. If you go to a pride parade, you'll probably see a lot of people fighting against many of those biases there, right? So those things are present. And so when we set up an AI to say, okay, read 1,000 scripts from the episode, from episodes of Friends, and now write a brand new Friends episode, when there are no black people in the episode that the thing makes, you can't call the AI racist. There were no black people in Friends until the Aisha last Tyler. season, and then they canceled it. Like, they brought in one and then they said, that's enough. for the whole show. They didn't even say, well, what happens if we bring in two? Or what happens if we just take the black person out and keep it white? They didn't want answers to those questions. They just said, let's move on. So those are all indicative of a culture that you are pushing on this artificial intelligence. And mm-hmm. so we are in a, as a society, right? We are in a very peculiar time in history where we are developing artificial intelligence that we plan to give the keys to the kingdom. We want artificial intelligence to have a very themed, not themed, but a pragmatic approach to like traffic patterns and the ways we
Yeah, this one is super egregious. Yeah. So there's like a ton of pictures that like content-wise are identical. The difference is one is, you know, a person who identifies as a man, one is woman. And then the way that the AI interprets the content is wildly different.
Right. So when you have a man, you get keywords such as business, official, spokesperson. Well, it's in both. Public speaking, right? But when it's a woman who's not wearing the same clothes but is in a very high school...
Yeah.
Well, that's both. Actually, spokesperson is more for the man than it is for the woman. But like, you know, it just a smile shows up for the only time. Like, you get these qualifiers that culturally we do not distribute evenly.
And it's also interesting because, like, comparing different images of men and women, images of adult women mm-hmm. are very often tagged as teen or child or kid, and that was not happening to pictures of men, which is a fascinating thing.
Well, if you think about porn, we definitely play fast and loose with the age of women, huh?
You're barely legal until you're a MILF.
Hey... I mean, but again, that just goes back to that. It was like in that article, they said there was something like when it looked at black women, it never was able to make a good diagnosis on gender at all.
And then like an interesting piece. So this article goes into comparing different AI systems. So there's like Google, Amazon, there are a number of different ones. And I think it was Google had decided they're going to stop doing sort of like trying to interpret gender off of looks anyway, because people pointed out like, come on,
you should
now.
Stop this. Yeah.
You should stop doing that because we ask people their pronouns, because it's 2021. We don't assume based on appearance.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, but think about how much raucous had to be brought up for that. Think about how many people had to fucking die for that to become part of the national conversation. And the issue is that like, you know, we are definitely at a point where Apple, Google, and Amazon are far and away the companies, Alphabet, right, is now the parent company of Google. Anyway, these Silicon Valley-based places are going to be the ones to make these decisions. And when you look at, when you are able to analyze the AI and point out the biases, one tends to look at the leadership in those companies to try to understand where those biases lie. How do those biases get in there? And then when you do make those looks and you see that stuff, you notice that it's not the United Colors of Benetton running those companies. It's not the UN. It is very pointedly people who have already had money, power, and privilege.
And I think this is probably a good time to like interject that piece about when people have tried to raise concerns about these issues,
yes.
How the companies always respond isn't always great. So like this article says, like, Google's been a really big leader in trying to have more fairness and equality in these models, but that's not always true.
Oh, it is. They have. And you know, that's the funny thing about this. And this is where I, oh boy, where's the soapbox? Get the dust off this. That is where, like, Google is a leader in this stuff. Google has been one to try to put ethics at the forefront of their AI research and the papers that they have published and the groups that they have formed to publish those papers to lead that conversation. However, when they have put people who wouldn't typically be put in positions of power, they have ended up with the output of those people that calls into question a lot of that power and such. And then the reaction that they tend to have to those people is endemic of human tradition, which is to not upset the apple cart, but to remove the things that are charged.
Let's get into specifics. Problems. Like,
yeah, sure. I was talking very colorfully.
You were worried about getting sued right there or something.
Well, no, I think I was trying to explain from a point of view that I don't have how this shit comes to pass, right? So there is just Google ethical AI and then have yourself a good time. Ethical AI, and then Timnit Jabrew is a doctor. She's a nice lady. I follow her on the Twitter. TIMNIT is the first name. GEBRU is the second. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but she was the co-lead of Google's ethical AI organization, company, team. And she published a paper she co-authored a paper which explored, this is from an article by Fast Company, quote, which explored the risks of AI models that the search giant uses to power its core products. The models are involved in almost every English query on Google, for instance. The paper called out potential biases, parentheses, racial, gender, Western, and more, end parentheses, of these language models, as well as the outsized carbon emissions required to compute them. Google wanted the paper retracted or any Google-affiliated authors' names taken off. Jabrew said she would do so if Google would engage in a conversation about the decision. Instead, her team was told that she had resigned. After the company abruptly announced Jabrew's departure, Google AI chief Jeff Dean insinuated that her work was not up to snuff, despite Jabrew's credentials and history of groundbreaking research. The backlash was immediate. Thousands of Googlers and outside researchers leapt to her defense and charged Google with attempting to marginalize its critics, particularly those from unrepresented backgrounds. A champion of diversity and equity in the AI field, Jabrew is a black woman and is one of the few in Google's research organization. Not going to keep quoting, but they also ended up firing her co-lead, the other person who was leading the ethical AI team, because that person decided to check some of Jabrew's accusations that the discrimination she was facing was not limited to this one interaction. She was like, y'all have, I'm going to quote her one more time. It wasn't enough that they created a hostile work environment for people like me, in parentheses, this is added by the people, and our building, that's the added part, products that are explicitly harmful to people in our community. It's not enough that they don't listen when you say something. Then they try to silence your scientific voice. So her offense was not just that they got rid of her, but that they said that her work was bad. They tried to say that she was shitty at her job and insinuate that that's why she was let go, when that was not the case. They told her to stop with the paper. She said, who came up with this decision? I thought I was a leader here. explained to me what happened. They said, you quit. And then they fired someone who was like, wait, what the fuck is going on? And so in the meantime, because I've been following this, I know some recipients of fellowships to Google's AI and to Google as a whole have been rejected in solidarity with Dr. Jibru. A number of student organizations have also decided to not work with Google in the face of this. They are really trying to hold Google responsible for all of this. And but if this is the first you're ever hearing of this, you're not fucking alone, because I have to be the kind of nerd I am to have dug into this.
Yeah. Yeah, I hung out yesterday with a friend who is trying to de-Google and de-Apple her life.
Mm. That's tough.
You know, for a lot of reasons. And you know, it's like, at one point, the company's whole thing was like, do no evil. And then they took that off.
And that, yeah, I mean, like, ever since they took that off, and it was after I had, you know, gotten multiple Gmail accounts and got a number of Android phones and bought a more than one Pixel in my life, which is Google's phone, which means that any of the algorithms and technology that they use to track me are just built in. It's like written in. There's the wires. So I'm completely plugged in. But yeah, to try to unplug yourself because you don't like something that you're doing in this small but very important part is super tough. Shout out to DuckDuckGo.
Yeah, yeah. So if while we're on that subject, you know, like ways that you could do that if you wanted to, Proton Mail instead of Gmail, totally encrypted. DuckDuckGo instead of Googling things. Take Chrome off your computer and use like a Firefox or something instead. You know, what's funny is we're recording this on Squadcast, which requires you use Chrome. So.
It's funny because I think that, yeah, I mean, I use Firefox as my preferred browser. But the more you use the internet and the more you use things, you realize that, like, the problem with Google is that they offer a lot of things to you for free. The only thing they ask is that you don't stop them from tracking people. And they promise you that the tracking is anonymous. And honestly, I feel like it probably is. I think that you have to be a particularly nefarious actor to try to de-anonymize Google data. But they still have a shit ton of power in the media, in the field, in the medium. If you want to make a website that gets any kind of traction, you have to use Google Analytics. You have to submit, and the way you use Google Analytics is to allow them to track people on your website. So yeah, it's going to be the backbone of a lot of stuff, because once you decide that you're going to allow Google to help you, once you decide you're going to allow Amazon to help you, they have a whole wealth of they have wealth. They have so many tools that they can give you to handle anything you want, and they do it for cheap. Super cheap. Cheaper than I could ever try to do it on my own, because they have invested tons of money into it.
Well, this episode is depressing, because this is one of our, and it was capitalism all along.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah. Yeah. I didn't know how to make it better. It's like the thing is to hold these companies accountable. How do I, me, Daryl Charles, hold these companies accountable? Well, it's by talking about them like this on shows like this. But, you know, also, yeah, I've stopped using my Google search a lot. I use my laptop more than my phone for browsing and such. But that also is because I'm an old man who has been using computers for, you know, 30 years at this point. Like, damn, yo.
I was on an Apple IIe.
I had a Tandy, baby. I'm talking about late 80s. Fucking playing Jeopardy with floppy disks. Son, we was out here. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Little printing things out, and it's got the little tear-offs.
Yeah, the dot matrix printers. We used to make greeting cards. We cut fucking Hallmark out of our lives very quickly. You take that one piece of paper and you print in the fours, and then you do a weird folding thing, make it look like a card. pictures were shitty. But what would happen?
It was all black and white.
Yep, all black and white with a balloon that looked not like a balloon. And your aunt would be like, you made this with the computer, huh? That is so nice. What is that, a flower? Huh, these kids. Like, oh, it was adorable.
I feel like that is a very good segue to the last story that I wanted to bring up as a part of this, and our last peek is of fucking news as part of this theme episode. And this is a fun one, and I want to give a shout out to my friend Adam from Red Light Photos, who sent me this article, and it's about the deepfake cabaret. So you can find out more about this on CNET, but it's called the ZZ Show, Z-I-Z-I, and it is a... according to the person who created it, a collaboration between the creativity of the human and the slightly sterile, monstrous technology. And the basic idea is that, you know, you need to still have your spaces for queer art. There was a pandemic, so, like, you know, gay bars couldn't necessarily be open. And so this artist decided to basically get images of a bunch of different drag queens from every different angle and then create this cabaret where you can choose the song and choose your fighter and then have them lip sync this number that they never did. And so it's a drag show, and it's also just using deepfake technology. And it's interesting because it's like the subversion of the way that most of the time I hear about deepfakes is usually nefarious, and usually people are very worried because it's like revenge porn, or it's like political, and people are trying to be misleading and to cause, you know, some kind of terrible controversy. But this one is actually really cute, and it's, you know, it also is sort of just describing how art works in general, that, you know, you take technology and it really just has the capacity to, you know, exacerbate who you already are. To quote, like, the Falcon and Winter Soldier, like, power just makes you more who you are.
Yeah, baby.
So I think that's really cute. And when I first heard about this, I was like, I don't know if I like that. Like, because so many things want to replace human people. And I don't always like that. I remember one time at a gym, a manager was like, you know, we can replace the spinning instructors with just a program. I'm like, yeah, I mean, you can. But I think a lot of people won't come to class for a computer who doesn't affirm them and make them feel stuff in their pants. Like,
right, yeah, make them feel stuff in their pants, and also know that they are kind of going through the same bullshit that you are. They're not your...
Yeah.
That motivational aspect is definitely something a machine can't give you.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, so a checkout at CVS is one thing, right? Like, right. I don't want to bother that person, and I would rather just take care of this myself, thank you. But it's very different for, there are lots of things where I want a human interaction. Mm-hmm. And so reading this, I was like, well, I guess, you know, it's just one more venue. And not mad at that. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know, you know, where this will go. I am not creative enough to guess. I'm curious if you'll do like a deep fake comedy routine where you present yourself as like a small Asian woman
and then
who really likes motorcycles.
You know what's funny? Do you know how much that would help a lot of these canceled comedians?
Oh,
because they are saying a bunch of dumb shit that is thinly veiled racism, but if it was said by the person who is being denigrated by it, it would fall. You would see a lot of the, you know, the wokes fall on the sword of, well, this person's just talking about themselves, as if purporting a negative stereotype is fun and cool. You know, like the issue isn't portraying the stereotype, but just who is doing it. And I think that a lot of the people who are facetious in their lament of a cancel culture, which isn't a thing, or the wokes, which definitely people purporting to be is a thing, in the facetious nature, what they like to bring up is like, well, if I just wasn't that person, then I could do it. And it's like, yeah, I guess you could, and I wouldn't be upset that you are assimilating a culture not your own, but I also have ire for the people who are in that culture and then still decide to make money off of negative stereotypes. Like, those people are also trash. The fact that you're not one of them and are trying to do the same thing, I guess it makes you more trash. But we're still talking trash here, right? But no one wants that nuanced conversation, and they definitely wouldn't, if they are purporting to do, if they are doing that, they definitely wouldn't want me around to bring up that point. But yeah, I think that there's definitely a difference with this. This is just like the first article, where it's like, if the people who are being portrayed using this technology have no issue or are benefiting from it,
then consented to it and got paid for it,
right, then there's not really an issue. Now, there's the question, we brought this up on a previous episode of DTF, where there was like accounts on OnlyFans that were clearly not real people, and they were using deepfake technology, computer animation, whatever you call it, to do a lot of the things that people make money for on OnlyFans, but they weren't actively putting their bodies on the line. And the actual humans who were threatened by this were like, this is a bit weird because I can't do the things that this animated person can do. And so that argument I can see showing up here. But thankfully, I guess, in this day and age, getting this kind of performance, like a nice, you know, super queer drag performance, is you kind of have to do it in the real world. And getting it purely online is probably not going to be a huge drain on local talent as of yet. But, you know, we are slowly trying to make sure that high-speed internet is something we can get to everyone. So as that becomes ubiquitous, this problem may become ubiquitous if you want to be a genderqueer person in the middle of Idaho and shake your tail feather.
Yeah. I think I also want to just mention that this article does a great job. We've been discussing like how AI is inconsistent, and I mean, just like so many different forms of technology are not great at like picking up on black people's faces, mm-hmm. and like you know, just sort of continuing all the other systems of like privileging some over others, and one of the things with AI has been pretty consistently bad with trans faces. That's the thing that they go into in this article, that so a study by Microsoft research fellow Morgan Klaus Schurman, published in 2019, found that facial analysis software performed consistently worse on transgender individuals and were universally unable to classify non-binary genders. So,
I mean, isn't that what isn't this what you wanted? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter. And then the computer,
maybe it doesn't matter.
Sparks come out of its eyes, and those sparks match the glitter on the translucent bodysuit of the person, and they're like, I won.
Yeah, we foiled CCTV. Yeah. Wearing masks and being trans. It's gonna solve the problems. It reminds me, so there's like this movie, it's like Mitchells versus the Machines. It's like a new movie that came out. Yeah, it's like animated. It's by the people that did like Into the Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. And this is not too much of a spoiler, but there is the machines have a difficult time recognizing the face of the dog. So the dog, I also just love the fact that it was voiced by Instagram famous Doug the Pug as opposed to a human voice actor. It's voiced by a dog that I follow on Instagram. So I was like, I know him. But the computers
representation keep going matters.
The computers keep going like, dog? Pig, dog, pig, loaf of bread, like getting overwhelmed. I kind of love that. And then this article goes into like, you know, they kind of like the failures of this too. The ZZ Show, they talk about, they aren't trying to be like flawless recreations. They're not trying to dupe you. They're purposefully messy.
Yeah.
And so as you switch between performers, you'll momentarily see the like underlying skeleton onto which the bodies are wrapped.
Yeah.
And it's intentional. According to the designer, visually deconstruct the illusion. And so that's also fun too. It's like, we're not trying to replace people. This is just its own fun experiment.
But that's the funny, that's the not fun part that's funny. We're not trying to fake anybody out yet. Until we come out with the new Pentium processor. Then we don't have to try to fool you. We fool you so many times in a second that your eyes can't know the difference. And then, you know, go watch The Running Man. Please. Oh. If there is one takeaway from this entire movie. Wow. Yeah, it's a movie. That's what kids are saying. Yep. If there's one takeaway from this episode, go watch The Running Man. Because I do think, and I'm only coming up with this conclusion right now, but a lot of the deep fake stuff that we're talking about is very pointedly but lightly brought up in the movie The Running Man, the Arnold Schwarzenegger sci-fi action vehicle of the late 80s, maybe early 90s.
I don't know if I've seen it. Now I gotta go do that.
Oh, you got to. Fucking Richard Dawson's in it. Right. Oh, man. Oh, it's a good one. All right. I'm not gonna go into my Arnold Schwarzenegger tangent, because I think that the one thing I will say about Arnold Schwarzenegger, he has always really tried to do cool shit. His movie choices and the kinds of stories he was telling, he partnered with some pretty smart and ingenuitive people like James Cameron and shit to like really put to make some of the big questions. I think the movies that he did, you can see where the technology of the time was limited by the stories that he wanted to tell. And so stuff that might look hacky or hokey was like, yeah, but this was like millions of dollars of effort that were put into making the thing happen. And what you end up with are pieces that kind of transcend time, because they did what they could with the stuff that they had, but they really were making very cool and pointed questions. And fucking Running Man and Total Recall are two testaments. Ooh. To
I do love a Total Recall.
Yeah, if you like Total Recall, watch The Running Man. It's less heady, but it's about a future where we have gladiatorial matches with horrible death and destruction that we bet on and cheer for.
So like now.
Exactly.
Okay, all right. I'm sold.
Yeah,
all right.
Yo, The Running Man. Ah, man, I'm going to go watch that tonight.
All right.
Yes! Well,
that sounds like a good plan. All right, well, that will conclude our special AI-themed episode of DTF. Mm-hmm. We would also just like to point out that we are not picking an exact day, but this show is now, 8 years old?
Yeah, I think, eight.
The show?
What's that?
Yeah, the show is now 8 years old this month. Is it third grade? Yeah. By now, it knows how to do the multiplication tables.
Maybe it's learning multiplication. It might not, if it was actually born 8 years ago, it wouldn't know cursive. But when we were its age, we knew cursive.
For some reason.
Well, yeah. I mean, because we were old. We are old. And that was important. You needed good penmanship when people didn't have computers at the ready.
Yeah. The last time I had to write something down, I was like, I used to be able to write words. I'd use like a pen, and then like letters would emerge on a paper.
Exactly. We had pen pals.
Oh my God. Yeah.
There was like some other school, and I don't even remember. It definitely is not in my memory banks now of like if this was a school in another country or just another state. But I remember we had pen pals as a class, and it was
so did we.
It was like a cross class thing where you would just like write to some kid.
Yeah, I had some boy in the South. His last name was Witt. That's all I remember.
I have no clue what the fuck told this person and what they told me. Innocuous.
Yeah.
But it's a way to learn what the Postal Service does and how important it is to the advancement of modern thought in our society, and why Louis DeJoy should be drawn and quartered on television.
Into it.
Or at least jailed. Or at least jailed. Let's just, okay, jailed.
I don't know.
Fired. Whatever. Then possibly jailed. But, you know. But I'm sleeping.
Whatever. It shouldn't be good.
Yeah. Watch Total Recall. That's all I can. I mean, Running Man. That's all I can say.
Both of and those things. Whatever you want.
Please.
Keanu versus Cruz.
Yeah, yo. Let us know. Keanu versus Cruz. What's popping?
Yeah. All right. So, on that note, happy anniversary.
Bye bye.
We did it. Oh, wait. No, you got to tell people where they can find out more about you and can also buy their Black Gentrifier merch, like the tank top I'm wearing right now.
Ah, yes. Yeah, DarylComedy.com for all of your Daryl Charles comedy things. You can also go to DarylCharlesComedy.com if you really want to be that person. But things I have to tell you, June 13th, I believe that's a Sunday, whatever that Sunday is, if I'm off, I will be hosting Daryl Charles and Friends at Punchline Philly.
Ooh.
I'm bringing the folks. I'm bringing a bunch of people. We're going to have some nice guest spots from my friends, but we're also going to have some actual sets by my friends. I will tell everybody who the people are. We're going to have Mike Quindlin, who is a Philadelphia native, but a Baltimore resident, who is a co-founder of the Ellicott City Comedy Festival. Very funny man. Eddie Lyles and Ivan Martin, who are co-founders of different comedy festivals, one DC, one Baltimore, but very funny people. And Kat Mosley, Philadelphia favorite.
Ooh, yeah.
Wonderful lady, friend of the podcast.
Yeah.
And me with some guest spots that I'm not going to tell you yet. But, you know, that's the thing. Come to the show. It's going to be so much fun. It'll be outdoors. As far as COVID's concerned, they honestly have a fucking ectopack that they put on their back to sterilize everything between shows. I've seen it happen. It's adorable. It's like a nebulizer to kill microorganisms. It's amazing. So yeah, very, very safe, very outdoors, very fun. On a Sunday in June.
I'm coming.
Punchline Philly.
That's it. Yeah. I'm going to come to that. For me, you can find more at Sex with Timaree, T-I-M-A-R-E-E, where I will post not only the news stories, like including the things that we discussed on the show, as well as some porms, and also my upcoming like workshops and shows and things of that nature. So for instance, I have been doing at least one a month of a spotlight at Taboo, where I'm basically combining TED Talks and burlesque. So if you'd like to hear extended versions of talks that I've given at Get You a Babe Who Can Do Both, I'm doing that. So I've talked about things from like the satanic panic to pandas, sex workers' rights to like, what else did I talk about recently? Pandas. So lots of that.
I've loved every Do Both that I've gone to.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It's a fun time. It's just like, it's nice to be back in a venue and doing stuff. So we've got that, and I've got some new shows. So I've got a new monthly show at Taboo called Tassel Request Live, where you get to indulge in your love of whatever genre is the key that month, and also just, you know, of like 90s throwback culture. So you can get tickets for that. Again, all this stuff's on sexwithtimaree.com.
And sweatwithtimaree.com. Yeah. Go there too.
Oh, yeah. If you want to work out with me, come work out with me. We do boot camps and Pilates every day. And it's virtual, and you can be in your house, and you can have your camera on or not. Whatever brings you joy.
Yeah, man.
Sweatwithtimaree.com.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening for 8 years.
Yeah, yo.
And we have big plans. We don't have a specific date yet, but we do have big plans. We're going to be back in venues for live shows soon.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. We will keep you posted. Mm-hmm. So we miss you. We love you. And we enjoyed getting to do this in person and staying afterwards and dancing.
Hey, yo, so. I'm fully vaccinated. I'm hugging everybody when I see y'all.
Big same. Mm-hmm. So very excited.
As long as you're fully vaccinated, I might ask for a card. Look, don't judge me.
Yeah,
I just care about my loved ones.
Yeah.
And valid. My strangers, too.
Just, you know, the same questions that we asked about sex. Like, when's the last time you got tested? What's your status?
Are you reasonably sure that I'm not going to catch a disease if I do this with you? Cool. Good. I won't wear gloves.
Just a normalizing part of our interactions with other humans.
This is how it should have always been.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. And we will talk at you next week. And you ain't hanging with the team if you ain't down to fuck.